Welcome to The Roundup, a North Queensland-based podcast with regional content for regional clinicians. I'm Alyssa Hatherley, a GP and family planning clinician and head of JCU's clinical school here in Mackay. This collaborative podcasting project between North Queensland Regional Training Hubs, JCU, and our local regional hospital and health services will bring you a different regionally relevant podcast each fortnight. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands where we meet today, who were the original providers of healthcare in this region. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Wojciech Schubert, who is an endometriosis specialist who has recently arrived in the Mackay region. Hi, Wojciech.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. I know your special interest is endometriosis, and you have recently come from the UK. Can you tell me about your fellowship training, Wojciech?
Yes. I have a long history of being interested in helping women with chronic pelvic pain and endometriosis. And as part of my training, I completed two fellowships. One is in medical treatment of chronic pelvic pain. That was in Scotland, in Edinburgh. And I also completed another fellowship in Norwich, where I have just moved from. And that was to do with managing complex patients with endometriosis and building up experience in advanced laparoscopic surgery.
Oh, fantastic. What extensive training. We are really lucky to have you in North Queensland, Wojciech. Could you tell us a little bit about endometriosis, why it's so important that we're talking about it today, and what our community members need to know?
Yes, I think that there's increasing awareness of endometriosis amongst patients and also healthcare professionals. It's a very prevalent disease, and it's estimated that approximately 10% of women suffer from endometriosis at some point in their life. Endometriosis is a chronic condition which can present with debilitating pain and also subfertility. So it has a huge impact on individuals.
So it's an incredibly important thing for us to talk about. As a GP, I know that this is often undermanaged in our community. Wojciech, how does endometriosis actually happen in the first place?
So there are several theories on how the endometriosis develops. The first theory of retrograde menstruation was proposed by Sampson in 1927, so nearly 100 years ago. And there has been a lot of research done recently that proposed some other theories. So, for example, epithelial mesenchymal transformation, which allows the endometrial tissue to migrate and then hatch into pelvic organs. There has been also another theory of diminished immune response. And we know that macrophages present in the pelvic fluid play some role in that, in a way that they are less capable of mopping up the endometriotic implants. That's just a simple description of this very complex problem. And lastly, we know that there's presence of endometrial stem cells in deeply infiltrating endometriosis. So this is the type of endometriosis that grows around the bladder or around the bowel.
Right. So a few potential mechanisms for development. Could you explain the different phenotypes of endometriosis for us, please?
Endometriosis is a disease where tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows outside of the uterus, and that can have a variable effect on pelvic organs. And from the clinical and surgical point of view, there are different types or phenotypes of endometriosis. We have superficial endometriosis, where the endometriotic implants are limited to the growth within the peritoneum. There's also ovarian endometriosis, commonly known as chocolate cysts, where the endometriosis grows within the ovary and forms sometimes quite significant size cyst filled with old blood products. And lastly, deeply infiltrating endometriosis. And this is where the endometrial-like tissue grows into other organs, infiltrates, for example, bladder or the bowel, and grows into spaces that are normally not occupied by and shouldn't be occupied by any lesion. So, for example, commonly in the pouch of Douglas, where it can grow between the rectum and the vagina. It's also worth mentioning that these various phenotypes can coexist sometimes in the same patient, so it can be quite complex.
So, what are the most common symptoms that the patients with endometriosis will actually present with?
So symptoms can be divided into certain groups. First would be painful symptoms. And these painful symptoms can be in the form of cyclical pain. Sometimes the pain can be related to menstruation or pain during the ovulation. Another commonly reported symptom is pain during intercourse. And also, it depends which organs in the pelvis are affected. So, for example, if there's involvement of the bowel, patients will commonly report painful bowel motions, bloating. If the bladder is affected, that could mimic symptoms of urinary tract infection. So, I think there's broad presentation of painful symptoms, and it really depends where are the endometriotic implants located. For example, if the tubes are involved, there's scarring around tubes, then infertility can be the leading symptom that the patients can present with.
Right. Is that most of the presentations, Wojciech?
So, in terms of other symptoms, we see patients reporting additional secondary comorbidities, and some of them are directly caused by endometriosis or just the fact that someone's constantly living in pain. But these additional comorbidities could include fatigue, depression, and anxiety is also significantly more common in patients with endometriosis. And about 60% of patients with endometriosis will also have symptoms of IBS. So IBS, it's not a pure explanation of the patient's symptoms, but can sometimes be a part of the package of living with endometriosis.
So, Wojciech, you mentioned pain and subfertility as really important features in our patients. How else should we be diagnosing endometriosis? Is it really based on that clinical picture?
So I think it starts with patients presenting usually to their GP, to primary care physicians, and clinicians can sort of raise the suspicion of endometriosis based on patient's symptoms, sometimes examination. That is very often good enough to initiate basic treatments, for example, hormonal treatment, to see if that gives patients desired relief. If that fails, then we need to move on to some further investigations. For example, imaging can be very helpful in diagnosing some forms of endometriosis. So, for example, ultrasound scan can easily pick up ovarian cyst or chocolate cyst, and that would be a confirmation of endometriosis.
So, Wojciech, when we are suspecting endometriosis in a patient in a room, it's really appropriate for us to start that hormonal treatment straight away, isn't it? Rather than waiting for the condition to worsen or to be confirmed with radiological or surgical techniques, because we can treat it adequately, can't we, without going any further?
I think management of endometriosis is a team effort, and that starts with a GP and also specialists. Supply of specialists is quite limited. So I think it's important that we initiate some of the common treatments in the community, but don't forget about early referral if those initial attempts to control patients' symptoms fail.
So, if we are going to be further investigating, we'll start with some imaging. What are the best modalities to pick up early endometriosis?
Ultrasound scan is very good in picking up endometriosis around ovaries. We're now getting better in recognizing pelvic adhesions, so using dynamic ultrasound scanning. I think there's still a little bit of a journey for sonographers and our radiologists to master this skill, but we're certainly getting better in picking up some other features of endometriosis. But ultrasound scan still has some limitations, and ultimately the gold standard to confirm or exclude endometriosis is a diagnostic laparoscopy.
Which can still miss endometriosis in some cases, can't it, Wojciech? What's the specificity of the diagnostic laparoscopy?
I think diagnostic laparoscopy is probably the best modality to confirm presence of endometriosis, and we're quite good these days in picking up even small peritoneal lesions. We systematically investigate or look at the upper abdomen and pelvis. So I think combining the initial ultrasound scan examination and diagnostic laparoscopy, we can be fairly confident that we have either confirmed or excluded endometriosis.
That's fantastic news. Dr. Wojciech Schubert in Mackay, you've talked about endometriosis affecting 10% of women, with pain and subfertility being really common presenting symptoms, as well as those secondary comorbidities of depression, fatigue, and anxiety. You've talked about the different phenotypes being superficial, ovarian, or deeply infiltrating. So,
Okay.
Wojciech, in those women in whom we suspect endometriosis, we've talked about a really good examination, as well as our history taking, and then the opportunity to do further imaging or a diagnostic laparoscopy. Where to next for these patients?
I think during the workup of a patient presenting with any chronic pelvic pain, we also need to investigate for any possibility of infections, and especially we need to exclude possibility of sexually transmitted diseases. So that's part of the routine early investigations. We've mentioned about ultrasound scan. Patients presenting with urinary symptoms should have at least urinalysis taken. And let's not forget that we should exclude or make sure that patient doesn't present with early pregnancy before we embark on any invasive testing. And we talked about ultrasound scan imaging, diagnostic laparoscopy. There are some additional tests that a specialist may request. For example, more commonly we use MRI scan imaging, and that can help us with planning any major operations. So it's never a first line investigation, but further down the line we sometimes use MRI scanning. And diagnostic laparoscopy can always be combined with diagnostic cystoscopy or sometimes colonoscopy in those patients who have severe bowel or bladder problems, mainly thinking about other explanations for the patient's pelvic pain.
Well, that's a really good idea if we could do a couple of those interventional investigations at the same time. So, Wojciech, Why is there still such a delay in diagnosing endometriosis when we have all of these great tools for diagnosing?
So firstly, endometriosis is a chronic disease, and symptoms are often present for months and years before patient's initial presentation. Secondly, symptoms are often non-specific, overlapping with other urologic or gastrointestinal disorders. So that makes it really challenging to pinpoint that it could be endometriosis that the patient is suffering from. So sometimes it takes a fair bit of time to actually for the symptoms to fully present and develop to gain a little bit better understanding.
Right. So on average, how long might it take for a woman to have endometriosis diagnosed in Australia?
So when I first started learning about endometriosis about almost 10 years ago, we used to quote that it takes over 10 years to diagnose someone with endometriosis from the time when they first experienced their problems or symptoms. We've made a great progress, and currently in Australia, we quote that it is 6 years from the onset of symptoms to the diagnosis of endometriosis. So, although it doesn't seem like we're doing very well, we have come a long way over the last 10 years.
No wonder women are presenting with those secondary comorbidities that you mentioned, like the depression, fatigue, and anxiety. Now, Wojciech, can we just talk about the difference between endometriosis and adenomyosis briefly?
Yes, so adenomyosis is also a very or a relatively common condition, which sometimes overlaps with endometriosis. So we defined endometriosis earlier in our conversation, and adenomyosis is described as growth of the endometrial tissue that normally lines the uterine cavity, but it grows into the muscular wall of the uterus. So from the histopathological point of view, the cells are very similar or the same. They are also abnormally placed, so outside of the uterine cavity, but there's a slight difference in terms of the location. So when I explain adenomyosis to my patients, I sometimes use a term, a sibling disease of endometriosis. And in about 50% of the cases, these two conditions coexist at the same time.
Of course, those women with adenomyosis alone might present a little bit differently, mightn't they, Wojciech?
Yes, that's exactly right. So adenomyosis alone would commonly present with a long history of heavy periods and very painful periods. Very often women describe as debilitating periods, literally from the very first periods they've had in their life.
Now, Wojciech, should we just talk a little bit about those hormonal options for treating endometriosis that could be commenced before a patient sees a specialist, or maybe even effective instead of requiring specialist treatment?
Yes, so surgical treatment is never first line treatment. So we should always consider, and if appropriate, we should try some of the non-surgical strategies. So hormones are very commonly used in managing endometriosis, and we aim to suppress menstruation. So for that reason, progestogen-containing intrauterine systems are very helpful, and that is a very low dose of progestogen. So patients are less likely to suffer from the side effects of those preparations. And we commonly use progestogen-only mini pills, occasionally mini pills, things like medroprogestogen injections. And at the far end of this spectrum, we could use treatments like GnRH analogs combined with low dose HRT. And the new kid on the block is GnRH antagonist.
So, in terms of hormonal treatment, we have the progesterone-only pills, and other LARCs, the long-acting reversible contraceptives, can be enormously effective, can't they? Particularly the levonorgestrel-containing intrauterine system, or MARINA. We do also have Zoladex, as you mentioned, and then that new medication that should be an oral form of Zoladex, Rayequo, that has a little bit of estrogen in it as well, doesn't it?
Yes, so it's actually antagonist, so it's receptor antagonist, so it's supposed to have much better side effect profile, and obviously patients don't require injections, it's oral preparation, so I think we all have high hopes for this treatment.
It will be fantastic just to be able to keep those ladies out of seeing their general practitioner every month for their Zoladex injection. I think it's not unusual, though, for women with significant endometriosis to get a real flare-up of their pain in the first few weeks with their MARINA. Is that correct?
So, yes, MARINA has got relatively slow onset of action, and I usually quote patients that it takes minimum of 3 to 6 months to see gradual improvement. So I always encourage to persevere a little bit longer and give it a good chance of working.
So for women who have been living with endometriosis, as you say, it's about 6 years from the onset of their symptoms until diagnosis. What are the social and the economic aspects of living with a condition like endometriosis?
So it's often described as ripple effect that starts with lower quality of life for those who are affected by endometriosis. And that also has extended effect onto their families, their personal relationships, and finally workplace. We have good quality research evidence that there's association of loss of income, and if you combine it with high treatment cost, it can be overwhelming.
For a condition that affects 10% of Australian women, that's an extraordinary outcome, isn't it? Something that we can certainly improve upon.
And it is. And actually, a lot of this data comes from Australia. So it is quoted that 65% of Australian patients report taking unpaid leave to manage their painful symptoms. 31% miss on promotion, and 14% of patients reported loss of employment.
That's extraordinary, and certainly something that in Australia we can improve upon, I'm sure you'll agree.
Absolutely. So I'm really pleased to see some of the endometriosis management strategies that are released by Australian government, and also Queensland Health has become really proactive. There is a huge injection of finances, which was announced a few months ago. So I think with time, we're going to get better, and that will translate into improved patient outcomes.
So for patients suffering from endometriosis, they must have an extraordinary journey. How can we, as clinicians, from whichever aspect we're coming in contact with our patients, how can we help them best?
So I think early recognition, sort of working in collaboration with patients, recognizing that the patient is reporting symptoms at the point when they have already suffered long enough, and move on a little bit quicker. I think we can still improve on timely investigations and timely referrals for those patients who do not improve with initial treatment strategies, as we discussed earlier.
That's right. Believing our patients, not hanging our hats on a definitive diagnosis that we may never achieve, and initiating treatment early. That's incredibly important advice today. Thank you, Wojciech. Wojciech, I know you're really keen to improve access and treatment options for women in North Queensland. Can you tell us about the resources available here in the North?
So we have well-established endometriosis center for those complex cases, which is in Townsville. And locally here in Mackay, we are actually working towards establishing another endometriosis service. We are building a team of specialists with gynecological endometriosis specialists, input from colorectal surgeons, urologists. We have dedicated radiologist and sonographer. And also, we have just started collaboration with our fertility specialist in private sector. So there's a lot of things happening, and I expect that in the next few months, up to a year, there will be a significant progress in Mackay as well. A lot of centers are building their experience, so there's a range of options. Straightforward cases can be easily managed by the GPs. General gynecologists in each of the major hospitals in Far North Queensland can deliver a significant amount of services. And those who require specialist referrals can be referred to Townsville and hopefully to Mackay in very near future.
Wojciech, you've given us lots of resources that we can attach to the podcast. Do you think there's anything else that we need to talk about?
I think the main message, the key message, would be to think about various causes of pelvic pain or infertility when a patient presents. Consider endometriosis early, try some basic treatments, and if a patient is struggling, if we're not getting anywhere, think about early onward referrals. Endometriosis Australia is a great society, very proactive, and they have a lot of patient information resources. RANSCOG has some patient information resources and also some resources very helpful for clinicians.
Fantastic. Dr. Wojciech Schubert, originally from Poland, now in Mackay, thank you for being here in the North Queensland region to help our women with endometriosis. We appreciate your time today. Thanks again.
Thank you very much for having me.
For more information about the Roundup, or to share your feedback and ideas for future episodes, visit nqrth.edu.au/roundup-podcast or contact us at nqrth.mackay@jcu.edu.au. We also want to advise that the views and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the speaker only and do not represent the views and opinions of James Cook University, Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs, or Queensland Health. The content supplied in this podcast is not intended as medical advice and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs is an initiative of the Australian Government's Integrated Rural Training Pipeline and is facilitated by James Cook University in partnership with public and private hospitals, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council, health services, Aboriginal community controlled health organisations, and general practice clinics.